Welcome back to the Swearapist podcast, your tattooed and screwed look at the underbelly of therapy culture. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. As a reminder, the Swearapist podcast is meant for your entertainment and insight only, not for clinical advice. The opinions given here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what works for you, leave the rest. We encourage you to be aware of your own triggers and concerns and to exercise discernment at your own discretion. We are here to fuck shit up. And I'm really starting to feel incredibly blessed by this whole entire project. I have been having a lot of conversations with a lot of people in my life who are extremely meaningful to me. And our guest for this episode is one of those characters in my life. This is somebody who I have known for a handful of years now. We've been running on another podcast project together for a little while. And it was like instant family. 3, 4 years now, yeah. And it was like instant family. I absolutely adore this human from his little tiny toes to the top of his head. He is somebody very, very special to me. So, this episode, we are going to be speaking with Lee from New Orleans, Louisiana. How are you, Lee?
I'm doing great. Hi, Lisa. Hi, everybody who's listening. It's good to be here.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know the South is kind of getting hammered by hurricane season, but thankfully, New Orleans is safe tonight. So, Lee, I'm so interested to share with our listeners your experiences with therapy, recovery, your story, the things you have loved and hated about therapy, and kind of what brings you to my chair. So, if you don't mind, tell the listeners a little bit about you.
That's an interesting question, Lisa. I'm Lee Pettisquo from New Orleans originally, back here in New Orleans. And praying for everybody in Florida because that's where the hurricane's been. Therapy started for me in 1977 when I was still in training in the military. And I'm going to try to be very mindful about that part. Now, I've had great therapists. I've had therapists since then to the present, to today. I've been recovering primarily in Narcotics Anonymous for over 37 years in August. This
Mind you,
past
I'm 33 years old, Lee, so you've been clean longer than I've been alive, and I will remind you around every corner.
Yeah, you guys always say that, and I'm always like, dang it, I need my Geritol. If the listeners aren't aware of what that is, it's for old people.
It's for old people.
It is for old people. I'm actually honored to say that I grew up in NA. I got here at around 27, birthdays, Christmas Eve. You can't compete with Jesus, so we're going to leave that whole biological birthday stuff right there. And I think I turned 28 my first clean Christmas. Getting clean, engaging in the 12 steps completely changed me as a human being. And I wish I could explain that in this session, but I don't know if there's adequate words to explain that transition from who I used to be to who I've become. And so
And
a
like
lot
you say, that statute of limitations runs concurrent, so there are some things
they
we
run concurrent, that's
won't
correct. Also,
tell anyway.
so I think I texted you. I have to be mindful if we're going to talk about my initial therapy because a lot of that stuff is still classified. It's never been declassified. I had a really strange job in the military. I did people and resource protection, like I guarded the president. I did counter sniper for the peanut farmer. So that was my first experience with therapy, was in December 1977, and you guys weren't even born.
No. My parents were 10 years old in 77.
Wow. Yeah. I actually had a primary therapist. We'll call him Dr. Watson because I still don't believe that's his real name.
Okay.
And three psychologists who I don't even know how to eloquently say this. They took me apart and then he would put me back together.
That was very much an old model of therapy, especially in drug and alcohol, also, where we like, I'm not going to say we, I've never done this, but the old model used to be like beat you down to build you back up.
Well, this was pre-addiction, so we have to see this has got this part is difficult. So
It's
yeah,
okay. Whatever you're comfortable
that
with.
was that's pre-addiction per se. It taught me a lot. It taught me a lot. It taught me about capabilities that I didn't know about. I didn't know I possessed. And it enabled me to do the job that I was tasked with and to be able to follow the orders that I was given. Your generation doesn't know a lot about the Cold War.
Troy does. He's a
And
history buff. He'll talk to you about it all day.
yeah, he and I had a moment in Athens.
I believe I have
And
a picture of that moment. Were you standing on the sidewalk behind the mansion we rented?
I started crying.
I'll
And
have
I
to
said,
send you that picture. I believe I have it.
Troy, I have to walk. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I needed to move away from everybody. So I went, yeah, send that to me. Yes.
I will.
Because those scars are still there. I would not say I am healed. I would say I am trying to heal. I'm healing. I still have a therapist through the VA today.
That
He's
reminds
got
me of
me.
something Barb was saying on her episode about how I had asked her about her experiences helping to clean up after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And she said, something really powerful that with respect to trauma, that there are some things that you just don't heal from. They just get a little easier to carry.
Over time. And my present therapist knows that I don't like drugs. So I'm on day seven of TMS therapy, transcranial magnetic stimulation. And yesterday I did feel different waking up. So I have to do the rest of the month. And I'll loop back to you after Halloween and let you know my experience with this because this is the first time I've done TMS.
How often are you doing that?
Every day.
Daily, so it's really intensive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And is that for what you would? Are you? I don't necessarily like. So for me, the labels are not necessarily as important as the human experience, but it sounds like you're being treated for PTSD.
Well, this has more to do with depression. It's supposedly going to stimulate neurons and synapse in my brain on this side of my frontal lobe. And it's magnetic, so it's non-invasive, and you hear tap, 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 and you kind of feel it, but it's not like touching you. So it's very interesting. I mean, my brain, I've said for years, is broken. It's been broken. So yeah, so I got, my fingers crossed that this will help. And remarkably, yesterday morning was the first time I woke up and felt good about waking up
You
because
don't have to
that's
like lay in bed looking for your will to live before you put your feet on the floor.
well since you asked when I wake up that's the hardest part of my day because normally it's like the feeling is man fuck this I want to go back to sleep I'm not getting ready to get up and do life which begs the question I have an amazing life I just spent a month in the mountains.
You did. And then scuba
But when
diving
I,
in Mexico and all those
that
things
was
you
in
do.
July, yeah. But when I first wake up, this same feeling that I've had since the military, like I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to do this. I don't feel like getting up. And sometimes I would go back to sleep and sleep another hour. But I have sleep issues from PTSD. So I don't sleep every night like normal people sleep. I wish I did. And now that I have the Inspire CPAP, I feel like I'm doing a commercial here. I have the Inspire CPAP. I have slept better, which, helps me to work out and muscles and whatnot. Tell Troy I'm not going for strongman this year, but
But you're in excellent shape. You really are.
for an old guy, you can say
I would never
it.
say for an old guy. You're in good shape. I think though, like my picture of you as being in shape is not just in the physically. I think it's because I know you on like a deep emotional level. I know you on a deep spiritual level. I know who you are at your core. And the outside stuff is just a bonus, right? Like I think you have done a lot of work to get to the point that you're at. But I also think that it's really beautiful that, like, one of the things I respect the most about you and your recovery is you are a grown ass man, right? Who is able to talk about those feelings. You're able to admit on sometimes a very public scale, right? That, like, this is what I feel. And you're able to get vulnerable and, you know, you're able to, like, hug another dude and shed some tears and not have that like internalized sense of like it's weakness to show emotion. And I think that probably coming out of the military, that was especially a difficult skill for you to learn.
That has been its own journey. So, when I came out, I was hard. There's no other way to describe myself. And then, due to some of the military trauma, I used alcohol and drugs so excessively. There was a period where you'd see me on Thursday at the club or wherever. And then when I saw you on Monday, you'd say, "Do you remember what you did?" And I would be like, I would have nothing. And I would have cracked someone's skull literally in a fight, in a bar fight or something. And it kept me in trouble. I kept getting in trouble, but that wasn't enough to stop me.
It sounds like you might have been really angry back then.
I was seriously angry. I didn't know that. A lot of that had to do with my dad dying when I was young.
Grief. So much grief for you over the course of the lifetime. I know even just the last couple years, your grief has been so heavy.
It has. It has. I read a lot about it, and I think in June I did personal one-on-one therapy for grief specifically, and then I did three-on-one, three people with one therapist in June. The process that pro I don't know if we're doing that tonight. That
That's okay.
process is slow. It's all interconnected, is what I'm learning. And it goes back to my grandma, my maternal grandma, who was my best friend when I was a boy. Her and I spoke broken French, and that prevented me from going to kindergarten. And wow, yeah.
Because you didn't speak English?
Because I spoke broken French as a child.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was and I didn't want to go to school either. I wanted to stay home and be with her. And then she died first. That was my first experience with grief at 5 or 6. But let's fast forward back to exiting the military. Because of the 12-step process, which was, it was kind of like it tricked me. In
It does
hindsight,
that, right? It does
yeah,
that.
because I wasn't willing to tell. I wasn't willing to talk. I definitely wasn't writing any of that stuff down. And because of sponsorship, our first sponsor, he Jerry Smith, he was a gentle giant. I'm that, which helped me to drop my guard. And once he got me to drop my guard, that's when it all started to come out. And he wasn't a therapist, but he probably should have been. And Dr. Sarah Spain, who was my therapist in, I want to say 2009. I went into a real dark period, clean, doing the steps, doing service work. I used to do
That
the
can
jail in
happen.
Dallas. Yeah, I was doing the jail every other Wednesday in Dallas, H&I. didn't die because H and I. You know, meeting attendance, relationships, everything, the whole successful business, the whole thing. But I went to this really dark place, and I wish I could remember everything that she said. She wrote it on an eraser board. She said, "I did. You didn't cause it. You couldn't prevent it." And the third thing, and then it was, and I was like, "Whoa, dude! You just I have goosebumps. I wish the listeners could see my arm."
It sounds like what you're describing is like the three C's in Naranon. If you're familiar, they say you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it.
It was close to that. I can't remember. I wish I could remember.
Yeah.
I've been trying. The third one is when my head popped and I was like, whoa. Because I had been carrying this, I analogize it with sponsees as a bag full of big boulders that you carry around every day. And our 12-step process allows us to take a boulder out. It gets lighter after the first 5 years. And then after the 10 years, you get another boulder out. Well, when she said that, the boulders just came out of the bag. And guilt, a tremendous amount of guilt is not a, that's not a good description.
It sounds like she gave you permission, though, in that moment to lay some shit down that had been heavy for you for a long time.
Like a tractor trailer load of shit. Yeah. And that combined with the continuation of the process brought me back from the dark side, because I was, I mean, I guess I can say what I was perpetrating. So there, I lived in a really nice area in Dallas, Irving, and I would go to this office, this one office, and there were these drug dealers, and like, you know, they're out there counting their money, and I'm like, man, I'm gonna fucking just stop and, you know, tool them up, which means A, potential murder. Be potentially getting my own butt shot off. Okay, because I'm not bulletproof and I didn't have any chemical law with me.
We forget that.
And a part of me had already figured it out, planned it out, and was ready to pull the trigger. And the therapist was like, dude, are you losing your mind? I'm like,
because you were doing this clean. You had like your whole life around you, all the
right.
socially acceptable pieces. But I mean, to me, that speaks to the idea that like we can have the houses, the girls, the cars, the clothes, the job, all of that shit, and still be kind of fucked up on the inside, even though on the outside we're keeping up appearances.
Exactly. And that was the second time something like that had happened. I was the main speaker at a Winnerta convention, Washington, Northern Idaho. I don't remember what year. 86 maybe. And fast forward 10 more years, I'm in Austin or somewhere else, and this guy goes, man, are you still clean? And I'm like, who are you? And he's like, I heard you share at this convention and we're gonna rob those, blah blah blah. I'm not gonna go into that story. But anyway, and he asked me to sponsor him, and I sponsored him for a couple of years. It was crazy. Crazy,
and in those
crazy.
Moments too, I have these moments in recovery also where sometimes I'm like, somebody asks me to sponsor them and I'm like, are you sure? Because I'm like fully stupid, right? Like, are you sure I'm the person, right?
I think based on him hearing me describe the scenario, he thought if I made it clean through all that and didn't do it, I would end up being a great sponsor. I sponsored him for a couple few years too. And ironically, his sponsee, this was back in Seattle. So I've lived up there twice. His sponsee up there is now in Austin, so I may see them at the end of this month and the beginning of next month, because I'm probably just going to go hang out with friends from there. My next little adventure.
I know you have so many adventures. So what do you think were the things, Like, let's focus on what you liked, what you didn't like about therapy, about the relationships you had with your therapists over the years. What were there like make or break things that you're like, oh yeah, this is like, this person is good for me versus, ooh, I don't really like this experience.
Okay, so this is crazy because all of my likes and dislikes have stories with them, Lisa.
That's okay. We have time, man. It's my podcast. We'll go as long as we want to.
So maybe a year out of, no, maybe 3 or 4 years out of the military, I had a therapist here in New Orleans, and I was doing massive amounts of cocaine. And I would pay her, I don't know, I was thinking it was like 85 an hour, 100 an hour, maybe a little over 100 an hour. And I would just burst into her office, like after being up, you know, doing coke for 3 or 4 days in a row nonstop. And she would just be like, calm down. And this was when they had the Walkman cassette players.
Oh, yeah.
She would put the foam earbuds on my head, it went over your head. Cut it on, and she would bring me into a room and dim the lights and just put me on the sofa. And I would lay in that room for 30 or 40 minutes, or as long as I could take it. And then it would dawn on me, I'm paying this woman all this money. And you know what I mean? And so then I would leave and I would storm out and make a big scene. And so I didn't.
You were mad that she helped you calm down?
Yes. Because I was paying her for it. That was just insanity.
Well, you sure as shit weren't doing it for yourself.
I couldn't. I was incapable at the time. What I like was having someone that I could tell things to and not worry. I mean, if it wasn't about me doing harm to someone, that the relationship, the therapist, patient confidentiality, that helped me tremendously because I was able to let these thoughts out of my head to someone else. And they would say, okay, that's not, you know, that's crazy or whatever. They wouldn't use the word crazy therapeutically, but they would say that's not a great thought.
I mean, there are moments, Lee, with my own clients, depending on the relationship that I build with people. Like, I've had moments where, like, I can look at a client, again, depending on the relationship, and be like, did you just hear yourself? Right? Or one of my favorite lines, and my clients always laugh when I do this, but once in a while, I'll be like, okay, be so fucking for real with yourself right now. I'm going to repeat back what you just said to me, and I want you to really hear it. You know, and there's a lot of value to that. Sometimes we have these thoughts that rattle around in our brains and they seem like good ideas, or they seem like they're based in fact, or they seem like they're the truth. And then we spit them out and it's like, no, wait, that actually does not make any sense.
Exactly. And that thought or that voice you just talked about, it's my voice. And so for having a period of life where I listened to thought, reacted to it, I mean, instantaneous reaction to it, to her slowing me down at first, then treatment a couple, two times, 85, 86, wasn't for me, you know, then finally getting clean in 87, and the incorporation of 12 steps, the concept of giving, which wasn't in my vocabulary, not from my neighborhood, there was these things that were introduced to me because of recovery that started opening up space and creating another voice, for lack of a better term. And this is what's really important, the ability to recognize when that voice said something like, oh, go rob the Brinks truck, because you're sitting next to it at a red light. I go, wait a minute, that's crazy.
Right.
That doesn't make, you know, it's not a good voice. So stop listening to it.
So it
And
sounds
so,
like you were learning how to like discern between what we would call like your emotional mind versus your rational mind. Your emotional mind that's still angry, still in crisis. And it sort of sounds like there was some identity stuff going on for you also, right? Like I have to fight, I have to be violent, I have to like lie, cheat, rob, steal to get my needs met. And it sort of feels like at the core of that was like, well, if I don't do those things, I'm going to die. Right, because my needs aren't going to get met. It sounds like rationally entered the chat and said, like, no, baby, we don't have to do that stuff anymore. We have ways to get our needs met in by means that are not like destructive to ourselves and to society around us.
yes, to a great degree. And having therapists who allow me the space to expose these things, to go back to, well, I was just following orders, because that was our thing. We would rationalize things way beyond scope. Oh, I was just following orders.
You had a perceived authority. Kind of almost like dehumanizing you, it sounds like, kind of stripping you of all of those aspects of humanity, which then gave you permission to carry out your duties, right? And then you come out of that, it sounds like you felt less than human.
Oh yeah. Our book talks about the animalistic level of living. Been there, done that. Homeless, jobless, 1985, Houston, Texas, send Jacinto. Yeah, been there, done that. And those tapes, that programming finally became undone, but it didn't start for me until 1987. Most people are born, that way. And so, yeah, 27 years old, man child, angry,
And for our listeners also, oh, go ahead.
didn't like where I came from. Trauma. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I
Because
was
I
going to
don't.
say for our listeners who cannot physically observe us, right? You are also a man of diversity, right? And I know that like your racial identity played a role for you also, if you want to talk about that a little.
Right. Well, in America, if you have 1% of black blood in you, you're black.
Right. And in the Cajun South, it's not always the case, right?
When I was up in Colorado, one of my best friends, he and his wife live up there, and he saw my birth certificate. We lived together in Irving, Texas, and on my birth certificate, it actually says Negro.
Really?
Yeah,
Wow.
and so being light-skinned, I fought everybody. I was too white to be black, too black to be white. And that was just the beginning. So that I don't know the word, we use the word broken so randomly now. So coming from that place, fighting for an identity, going into the military at the young age that I went in, because I was in at 17. I didn't get to serve till I was 18. And that's a whole nother story, and we're not going to do that one. Being trained to do what we did, getting medals for it. I'm actually decorated. Builds this persona. Then when you're thrust back into society, there's, I mean, I did SWAT with Orleans Parish Prison when I first got out. Then everybody I knew was in prison. So I couldn't do the job.
Awkward.
Couldn't do the job. Yeah, they knew my real name, and I'm like, whoa, get
Right.
out of here. And then into so much drugs. Then by 85, homeless and jobless, clean 2 years after that. And
Constantly searching for who Lee is in the mess of all of that. Constantly
right,
searching.
exactly. And after all these decades and all the therapy and all the step work and all the writing and all the journals and all of it, there was always this decent human being in there. I just,
More
it
than
took me,
decent. You are an exceptional human.
well, thank you for saying that. It took me a long time to find that person inside myself. So, do I recommend therapy? Absolutely. When we talked about grieving and Barb and all that, I'm trying to think of her name. Normal Broken. Her husband was Hamilton. See, this is part of why I need TMS therapy, because I can't, I used to rattle stuff off the top of my head. The book Normal Broken, about them losing their daughter, helped me. But it wasn't just one thing. It was that plus the five invitations by
Excellent, excellent book.
Frank Ostasiski. Ostasiski is the pronunciation.
Maybe he'll
Yeah.
correct us. Frank, if you're listening, feel free to hit up
Give us a
the
Frank. I have my last name is Padasclo. I mean, it begins with a P, it ends with an X, and it's got all the letters in between.
and let us
So
know how to say
yeah.
your name. And I have known you for years, and this is the first time I've actually heard you say your last name.
Wow, that's funny. Padasclo. It's on the screen right there. You see it?
I do see it. Very
But
French.
if you're from uptown, it's Padasclo. And that's just within my family. There's a French wine, Chateau Padasclo. I wish I was getting the money from that.
Right.
So the basic text, all of our literature, all of our podcasts, all of the step work, all of those things. Therapy, outside books, somehow bring all the components into a vacuum, into a being, into a self. I'm reading Beat the Bad
Okay.
about bipolar anxiety and depression, because of the depression I have. I still have depression. I probably have depression in the morning. I just know what to, I'm serious. I
Bitch
just
does
know
wake
what,
up right next to you, doesn't she?
I know what to do when I'm gonna wake up, and it's probably gonna be right there. Maybe, maybe not. It wasn't that bad yesterday. But Olivia Ryman wrote that, and her journey has been without medication and without those things. So there's no one path that I am aware of that, I mean, try something, do something.
And this
And
speaks so deeply to your resiliency, Lee, because I'm sure you bumped up against things that didn't work for you. And you consistently have tried digging at, like, okay. And, there's a place in our literature where it talks about certain things being insufficient for us, right? But it doesn't say they don't work. It just says that, like,
it's
what I
not
take away
enough.
from that, right, is that sometimes we need a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that to kind of pull together a picture of recovery that works for us as fucking human beings. Right? Because we can't be necessarily put into the box of like, oh, do this one type of therapy. It's evidence-based. It has to work for you. Oh, hey, do this recovery program. It has to work for you. You said, like, I'm a complex human. I need a complex program built around me, and I'm gonna be the one who makes it happen.
Finding that out is quite by accident for me. I've said 100,000 times, if you've heard me before, there are many, many paths on this journey. Mine just happens to be primarily an A, but that's not for everyone. I've seen 1,000 people come and go, probably more than 1,000. Some are doing fine. Some just became abstinent and went on with their life. Some got married, went on with their life. Some did not make it. A lot are dead. A lot of people died. So the journey is not as individual. It's not cookie cutter, like you just said. It's not one thing. I remember early 90s, we paid like $1,500 to go for a Thursday night, Friday after work, Saturday day, half a day Sunday, to ISA, the Institute of Self-Actualization.
Oh and, boy, that's a hot button topic.
Well, and it goes back to EST in the forum, which I didn't do. I did go to ISA. And the hilarity of it is, okay, you eight people get together and exchange phone numbers and call each other. Okay, we get that for free in NA.
Literally.
Saturday night, go up on stage, tell the whole audience, probably 300 people, something you've never told anyone before. We get that free every night.
This is a convention.
I heard, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff I heard too. It was bits and pieces of the recovery program. And probably that works for a million people. I don't know. Wasn't sufficient for me. You said in our literature, it says medicine, religion, and psychiatry wasn't sufficient. Alone, for me, it was never sufficient. I know people who are in recovery who are religious. I know people who are in recovery who have to take medicine. I know people in recovery, you know what I mean? And so each of those pieces could help someone. And that's all we really want to do. If all I did over the past 3.5 decades plus was help one person, I don't know. Would that have been enough? I don't know. I don't think so.
And I think that that's such an interesting, like, transitional concept for you, because you went from being a serviceman in the military, right, to being a man of service in recovery, right? And even for you, that, like, definition of service, you know, has evolved so much for you and become so important for you at heart level, right?
Giving, and I don't even say giving back in. Giving is
we owe, right? Because we owe a debt, you know.
That I personally can never pay off. And so, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, I'll be at the H&I meet because I want to help them help others.
So for our listeners who are not aware of H&I, that is the Hospitals and Institutions Committee. Both 12-step fellowships have them. And the responsibility of those committees is to take 12-step meetings into jails, hospitals, institutions, and other places where people might be laid up or not able to access outside meetings. So you're taking an H&I meeting into a prison.
One of the things that anyone can do, and I live by this, Lisa, is each day, do at least one random act of kindness. Here comes the cold water, Eminem. Don't tell anybody, and don't get found out.
It doesn't count if you post it on social media, right?
That
you gotta be slick with that shit.
That was so hard to do in the beginning, because immediately, like after 30 days or 60 days, I wanted, oh, look at me, look what I did. Well, not anymore. Now I want to do it and not say anything to anyone ever.
Quietly, peacefully.
Because of what I receive. A lot of people talk about beginning of their recovery and self-esteem being so low. Well, I can remember listening to people who were talking about having low self-esteem, like so excited to, I can't wait till I get low self-esteem, because
the bar is hell.
There wasn't any when I came through here, when I got here. And now I know how to fill up. I'm learning what fills me up. I just said giving fills me up. Tonight, one of the meteor showers could be starting. I don't know if I'll be able to get enough darkness to see it. I'll probably have to go out the back, which is the whole, like going into the jungle at night. I got to see the Milky Way last month, almost every night. I mean, there was two nights where it was like cloudy and then the supermoon happened and that washed out. I have pictures, will blow your mind. But anyway, so now I know how to fill up. You see what I mean? I don't, my pursuits have changed.
And now you're standing in awe. You're standing on a mountain, just absolutely in awe of creation, right? And like, you know, looking back into like the early 80s, that version of you, it sounds like, didn't even have time for that. Didn't have time to care. Didn't have even the like emotional intelligence or awareness to stop and look at the stars.
There was no stopping to look at anything in the early 80s, Lisa. When I separated, when I separated from the military, I did a drug, a specific, I'm not going to get into a drug look. I did a drug a specific way with a guy who I thought was my best friend. He was really my partner in crime. On New Year's Eve, we started doing this drug a specific way. On New Year's Day, I had already loaded up my car to bring him back to Houston. My fiance pulled up. I didn't even get out. I just waved at her and put the window down. I'm moving to Houston.
Wow.
And I just pulled off.
Which is so interesting because when you were talking about I separated from the military, my brain said, you're talking about it like it was a bad divorce. And now you're waving goodbye to your fiance. No further conversation, just up and gone.
The drugs were better in Houston. That drug gave me everything up, the house with the swimming pool, the Porsche, blah, 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 all the stuff. I'm wife full of money, never thought about her again until I got clean.
And then you're like, oh, I got some shit to fix.
Well, welcome to the world of social media. My girlfriend from 1978, when I first got my jump base in England in the United Kingdom, I think she wants more of an amends from me than my change, personal. Because there are people from that, from 78 to 87, that I don't even know their names. And so to amend, I changed. And
living amends.
She keeps reaching out and saying stuff, and so I need to do something. Send her $100 a month. I don't know. I need to
Does
do
that ever like
something.
just piss you the fuck off though? And like you have this recovery under your belt and you're working the steps, you're going through that process, you're in therapy, and somebody comes to you and says, you owe me an amends. And they're not even like some of these people aren't even in a fellowship. Some of these people don't even know what that word truly means to us. Ooh.
Does it piss me off that no, I'm gonna say no, it doesn't piss me off.
Your face is telling me something else.
Well, but because I helped her with her, I helped her a little bit to help her daughter get into a program, and now she has her grandson because her daughter is such a fuck.
Okay.
There are people in that window of time. I met her in 78. I got clean in 87. That I did harm. The face you see is because of the harm I caused. I don't even know their name. I could probably find them if I really went back to who I used to be to figure it out. Which that skill set is still in there. It's crazy. It's still in there. It's like crazy.
Oh, yes. We have very specific sets of skills left over from a previous life, and they do. Yeah.
So I've made amends over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and I'm different and I've changed, and I feel I've gotten the black marks off my soul. And there's more I can do. Because now hearing myself say this to you about her, something is happening inside. I need to do something. Or else I wouldn't have said that out loud to you just now.
Right. So that level of self-awareness and ability to reflect on yourself is, like you said, it's still an ongoing process. There are still moments where these things come up for you. And I'm hearing that you also are maybe learning to trust that like inner voice, right? That intuition, that part of you that maybe some people might say the part of you that is of God or of higher power or whatever you would call that. It sounds like you're trusting it a lot more than you did before.
And you are picking up on so much tonight. Ironically,
you're getting the therapist version of me a little bit tonight. I know we don't do therapy with our friends, but
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. It's okay. I'm good. That intuition or that God center or that spirit or whatever you want to call it. And in retrospect, I can see it was always right. Because there was, I mean, my mom taught me, she raised six kids after my dad. She did a fucking amazing job. And it was in there. And I have to put a lot of it on the military because a lot of stuff happened. And so I covered it up. I kept covering it up, pushing it further and further and further down to a point where I didn't hear it. If I thought something, I did that something horrific, good, bad, and different, whatever. Very, very rare was good back then. And now I've had enough time to hear that voice. To never gonna be perfect, never gonna be fixed completely or whatever you want to call it. But once the awareness heightens, I know now what to do. And it's gonna be real simple when it comes to the young lady. I was the woman, she's not a young lady anymore, she's a woman. I'm just gonna ask, like, what can I do? I can't undo. I mean,
right.
I can't undo it. I'm not him. I'm not harming her. I've tried to help when I could, but probably there's more I can do, and I'm all right with that. Yeah, I'm all right with that.
And that time and space that keeps coming up for you, time and space. I heard you say that it sounds like the therapists that you worked with in the past gave you the time and space, maybe asked you the right questions, kind of just gave you that place to sort of come to those conclusions for yourself. Did you ever have anybody kind of sledgehammer that approach? Did anybody ever try to like force you, like, you have to do it this way, this modality, this method? It sounds like the time and space works better for you than somebody trying to force you into a box.
So Lisa, I've been locked up institutionally. Their solution was Therazine. And those were in 86, I was much more pliable than I was in 1985. In 1985, I would fight. We fought while being locked up. Before they could give me the Therazine, they had to beat my ass because I wasn't.
I mean, I know you're referring to like criminal institutions and things like that, but for some reason in my brain, like our friends jokingly call you Pawpaw. I'm picturing like Pawpaw in the psych ward in his little gown with his butt cheeks hanging out and his grippy socks, like trying to start fights. And it is so funny in my head.
So you haven't read out of Orleans, apparently. The story's in print. It's already in print. So 85 was military lockup for as a veteran. I went there for drugs for treatment. March of 1985. And the treatment center was on the 8th floor. The psych ward was on the 9th floor. And I would end up on the 9th floor in 1985 all the time. I went back to the same place in 1986, but I was much more open-minded. That's not the word I used back then, but I knew I couldn't continue the life I was living. So,
right, that cycle's not cute.
Yeah. And then 85 and 86, Papa wasn't around yet. That's interesting you said that. So the times when I was anti-therapy was when I was locked in a facility.
Like when you were forced?
I went in voluntarily.
Oh, okay.
I would end up, for whatever reason, I'm trying to think of a reason, but nothing springs to mind. I wasn't ready back then. Interesting, funny story. In 86, H&I finally came. They didn't come in 85. H&I came in 86. Guy gave me the book. I got in his face. Like, fuck, you think you are giving me a book? You're trying to save my life, but I'm in your face. And I read it. And very strange things started to happen.
You read Who is an Addict, and you were like, how'd they
write
this
the whole
book about
book.
me?
I read the whole third edition revised.
Oh, third edition. Woo!
I read the whole thing.
For our listeners, currently we are on edition 6.
Wasn't trying to get clean. Didn't even use the words clean back then. Got out, still did what I did. And when people would be at the house and they were over the credit limit, I would pick up all the drugs and I would go get the basic text and I would start reading it. It would be like throwing holy water on vampires. They would vanish. And this is how sick I was. I thought y'all were addicts, but I just really enjoyed doing that drug. Clinically, I was out of my mind. I know that I'm not going to go into examples because that's not what this part, but
right.
Clinically, I was out of my mind. And I know that clearly today. The therapy that started maybe 4 years into being after being clean became sufficient because of the process combined with therapy. There's two therapists who I would really want to thank, and it was so long ago I can't remember their names. I remember Dr. Sarah Spain, but that was around 09 in Dallas, Texas. I'm going to text this to you later because it's going to come to me around 4 a.m. in the morning. It's going to pop
right.
into my head.
What would you thank them for?
For help saving my life. I had people saying, listen, this is your problem. I couldn't admit it. I couldn't see it. I couldn't accept it. And they clearly knew what they were talking about. Now, when I tell you 85, 86, I was out clinically out of my mind. That is not like fluff. Remember you used to, that is not fluff.
There is some real shit in mental health. There is.
And so I don't want to digress into an explanation of that. And now Dr. Mack is my present psychiatrist. He's the one who put who got me in this TMS therapy. And he watched me struggle with the military stuff and sat there objectively, created a safe, comfortable space for me to, 'cause I had to, he's like my, I don't know, my eighth or ninth. And so every time I would get a new one, I'm like a porcupine when I first go, like, oh, I'm good.
Telling your story over from the beginning to a new therapist is the fucking worst.
Oh, let's pull the Band-Aid off the scab that's finally healing.
Right, right.
And so he created a space for me. And at first, if it would have been up to him, he probably would have put me in a medically induced coma. Because, you know, they want to, he's a psychiatrist, not a psychologist. And I would say I've had more success with psychologists up until Dr. Mack, who is a psychiatrist. And he knows how I am. I'm anti-drugs. And so we've tried all kinds of stuff. I remember one point they were like, oh, you should try this microdosing ayahuasca. And I was like, are y'all out of your mind?
If I microdose ayahuasca, I'm robbing the whole village.
Thank you. And I'm not going to say what we would be robbing, because like we talked about there.
The statute of limitations, right?
But they in that community had started having really positive results with veterans who have PTSD. And I was like, dude, I would take it and lay on the sofa and just trip my balls out. You know what I mean?
So you add, well, veterans with PTSD is all well and good, but you add addict to that, right? And it gets a little more complicated.
And the file's that thick, and it's stamped in red all over the file. So yeah, let's
I
try some
opiates. I break out in handcuffs.
I can't do opiates. I break out in hives. I'm serious. Literally, I get. They after a surgery, they gave me the one everybody was all hooked on, OxyContin. I had hives from head to toe. Like 2 hours later, I was like, no.
Low key, like, fuck Purdue, because fuck Purdue.
Fuck Purdue. Yeah, I agree.
And fuck the Sacklers too. It's my podcast. I'll say it. Fuck them.
Right. So a lot of trial and error. If I got a choice, I would pick a psychologist. I wish I could think of this woman's name and it'll come to me, but she was so instrumental in my life. She was a psychologist. I am still engaged in therapy. I will probably remain engaged in therapy. I don't go every day. I mean, this TMS is every day, but I don't
see. And I love that you're talking about that too, because I think when people think about, you know, like various forms of therapy, especially for treatment resistant depression, right? I'm assuming that that is why he introduced this to you. I think a lot of people have this like very stigmatized perception of like one flew over the cuckoo's nest, right? Is always what I think of, right? Like bite down on this, hold on to your butt, right? Like we're going to shock the ever loving shit out of you, or we're going to lobotomize you with an ice pick. And that is not at all what these interventions look like at all. So you're having firsthand experience. You're like, hey, it's just like this little magnet. It's tappy tapping on my head, right? I'm good.
It's not touching it. The sound makes you think it's touching it, but it's not. It's not invasive. And you said frontal lobotomy. And of course, I think of Frances Fulmer, the actress. That's fucked up.
So fucked up. Mental health has come a long way, fortunately, and it does not look like it was, you know, the way that it was portrayed and still can be portrayed in the media now. You see shit like even Gone Girl a little more recently. Like there's a lot of mental health stuff that gets put out there that is just fucking crazy. And I don't like the word crazy to describe people, but the system, right, is very out of order with respect to how we represent mental health. And talking to people like you and Barb and some of our other guests on this podcast, I think really helps to shed some light on, like, these treatments are not what the fuck you think they are.
Right. This, the one that I'm doing right now, and I only see the psychiatrist about every 90 days to 6 months. And we video the last, like virtually. So that means the progress has happened and I'm way better clinically. And I still want to deal with the things that I'm challenged with. And so I'm going to do this TMS for almost every day, Monday through Friday for the next 3 weeks in a row.
Nice.
Before I take off again, because I want the benefits. And without mental health or the awareness that I needed something more than just recovery or just, I don't know, X, Y, and Z. I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful. And I wish more people paid attention to that, because I hear a lot of people's opinions. You know, either they're telling somebody they need to be on this medication or that. And I'm like, do you have a PhD? Do you have fucking MD after your name? No, then you probably should shut the fuck up, because you don't know.
Right.
You're diagnosing somebody. You don't even know what the problem is. So I strongly encourage listening to professionals.
And not assuming the role of a professional either, because I think it goes the opposite direction in a lot of our social circles too, where someone has been given a medication and they're told, you don't need that, you shouldn't. So some people need to take their fucking meds, Lee, right?
Thank you. I agree.
Some people need to take their fucking meds. Some people go play in traffic when they don't have them.
I agree. Now, there are people, like I was telling you about Olivia Ryman's Beat the Bad. Her experience, and I'm not finished, so I probably shouldn't even be talking about it like this, but her experience was she was put on too much, which then fucked her up worse.
Yeah.
So she has learned for herself, which is important. Everyone's journey is different. She has learned to a point for herself how to overcome. Like, I have no idea what it's like to be bipolar. So, I mean, I had a friend, and he's still a friend, who was manic. From met him when I first got to NA, and watched his cycles. I didn't know how to fix that.
Right.
And so he finally found a doctor, and they helped him, and he got off the rails, and then found another doctor who helped him. And he's a grandpa now. I keep talking about Papa. We gotta come up with a new name. I have no grandkids. But he's a grandfather. I think he's done really well parenting his daughter. It took him a while. And some of us are man babies. When I came here, I was a man baby. I went from mama to the military, and they both took care of me, which created a pattern. And a lot of
enabling.
Yeah, how do I even say that eloquently?
That's King Baby, right? Like, if you've been to treatment, you've heard of King Baby. It's that whole concept. And you know, for the listener, if you haven't heard of King Baby, I definitely advise a quick little Google search will give you a lot of the information that we talk about on this podcast. And I'm going to hold your hand, listener, when I say this. If you are triggered by the term man baby, man child, king baby, maybe take a look at you. Because I don't want people in my comments like, man baby.
Yeah, well,
you might be man baby.
I was talking about myself. So if they're triggered by it, yeah.
Right.
I might want to take a look at it.
We're just holding up a mirror here, huh?
That's what I'm trying to do. And like I said, if we help one person, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're helping many, many people. Cause you got me talking about shit that half the time I don't even want to think about or talk about.
And
which
it's a
is fine.
beautiful experience. And I, Lee, I'm so thankful for your vulnerability and your willingness to kind of put your shit out there, right? I mean, we don't know who's going to stumble on the podcast. We don't know whose ears it might go to. So, I definitely appreciate the depth of your vulnerability. What would you say to someone who is on that process of maybe I've had a therapist or two or a psychologist or a psychiatrist or two, and I'm feeling like a guinea pig and it doesn't seem like anything is working. What would you say to that person who's a little disillusioned with the therapy process?
You just pulled up a very old file, an old file. So Winston, I never, I didn't, Winston Churchill. See, my heroes are different from today's heroes. But
He's on Troy's Wall of Heroes for sure.
Winston Churchill said, if you're going through hell, don't stop.
Keep
Keep
going.
going. When I first heard it, it brought me through places, Bosnia, Kosovo, Beirut. Everybody talking about, oh, Beirut's getting fucked up. Beirut's been fucked up. There's a beautiful part of Beirut, and then there's a part that. Anyway, what I would say to them is, see how quick my brain went off on a tangent? Is to keep going. Try something else. Try something, another layer of something to help. Whether that is a new therapist, a new therapeutic modality, a program, jogging or drawing or journaling, whatever one can do to help oneself is what I would suggest to them. Now, if it was somebody in the program, that's a different
Right.
set of circumstances.
That's a little bit more sit down, shut the fuck up, and do what we tell you. Lovingly, of course, but.
Lovingly, with compassion, because it works. We have a proven track record.
We do. We definitely do. And Lee, thank you again so, so, so much from the bottom of my heart. I love you. I know, heart emojis all the way around. You are an absolute blessing to share my time with, my life with, my project with. So thank you so very deeply for your time. And if this reaches nobody but you and me, you have helped me tonight. It's always wonderful getting to kind of bond when we talk about like, the wall of heroes. You're one of those people for me too. You're
Thank
a
you.
predecessor, you're somebody I look up to. So it has been an honor to share time with you tonight. So with that, we will go ahead and wrap up for the evening. Please take care of yourselves and the people around you. If you or someone you know is in need of immediate mental health assistance, please dial 988 for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. For immediate assistance finding treatment, support groups, and community-based organizations, send your zip code in a text to 435-748. If you'd like to contact the Swearapist podcast, you can email us at theswearapistpodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the pod financially, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/theswearapist. All links are in the description. And as usual, folks, you know the drill. Email me if shit gets weird. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. Thank you so much for joining us.